Welcome, this is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This session of the show shares my conversation with Senator Becca Rausch. We had our conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of the pandemic period. We talk about our last conversation actually conducted in person across the blanket on the grounds at the Franklin Town Common back in August 2020. We talk about how she's doing through this pandemic. We talk about her priorities this year as the legislature starts a new two-year cycle. Amongst the priorities we discuss are vaccine equity, post-pandemic period, voting rights. Listen in and get a whole bunch of info. Links to the senator's pages as referenced during our conversation are provided in the show notes. Our recording runs about 41 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Senator Becca Rausch. All right, Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet at WFPR.FM and on the local Franklin area dial at 102.9. Today, our session with Senator Becca Rausch. Senator, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's been a little bit, I think, and I was going back to the archives. I knew it was last summer. It was actually August 14th. It was a gorgeous summer day on the town common.
It was such a beautiful day, and there was some wonderful music, and it was great to do an outdoor radio interview. It was the first outdoor radio interview, I think, of that kind of ilk that I've ever done. So thank you for making that happen.
The second one I had done during the pandemic, and we were socially distanced. We had the blanket and we had the remote recording stuff, and
yep,
it worked.
Totally worked. It was great.
We had the musical interruptions, but it was a good interlude for us anyway, too.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
And it's always great to see the town common being, so wonderfully used.
Yeah, to save people looking on the calendar, that was a Friday. So we were there late Friday. The farmer's market was there, and then they were preparing for the concerts on the common, which I think was either the second or the third one that time. So the band was prepping, and we hadn't considered that on our planning schedule.
Yeah. Scheduling error, perhaps on our part, but I'm glad to be back with you today. It certainly has been, what is that? That's like 4 months, 4 months, 5 months, something like that.
Almost 7.
No, really? Wow.
Yeah. time is just flying, right?
It really is. It really is. So much has happened. Thank you to the voters of Franklin and the voters in the 11 other municipalities I represent for sending me back to the Senate to represent you all in a second term. We did get right to work. We literally did not stop. My first session ended at 4:30 in the morning.
Wednesday, January 6th, if I recall.
Fateful day, Wednesday, January 6th, the end of the term, was January 5th. The session actually finished in the wee hours of the morning on January 6th.
Yep.
I took a nap, as did all of my colleagues. And then our swearing in ceremony was at 11 in the morning, which we concluded was outdoors. And it was actually, it was a wonderful ceremony. And then it concluded, around maybe 12:30, 1 o'clock. And then we all know what happened shortly thereafter down in DC. So as I look back on it, there was a single 24-hour period in which one of my bills was enacted fully by the legislature on maternal health justice. I finished my first session. I started my second session, and there was a white supremacist insurrection, domestic terrorism at the Capitol of the United States. And that happened all in a single 24-hour period. And I still can't believe that all happened in the 24-hour period.
Yeah, it was an amazing day on just so many aspects. And, the challenge for democracy, we're still going to have to figure out all the rest of those discussions, because clearly those folks did it. The justice system will do its thing, as we've been hearing, this person here, this person here being charged, arrested, et cetera, et cetera. But that kind of realistic conversation around the injustices, period.
Yeah.
It still needs to happen. And I think you're addressing it in some ways, particularly like in the women's health pieces, which you've got systemically with some of the voting pieces that we still need to do going forward. because clearly everybody needs to recognize, you know, this is a democracy. This is our role to have a voice, and a voice doesn't mean taking a gun to the Capitol. But, you know, there are processes to address things. And that's where we're trying to foster.
Yes, exactly right. And I'm really proud to be leading some of those efforts in the legislature. You mentioned a few of them. Thank you for you've clearly done your research, as always, into the work that I'm doing and with anybody you interview. Election reform is a huge component of my platform, as it was last session, continues to be this session. I was the leading champion of the broadest, most comprehensive voting by mail package last term in 2020. I have again filed comprehensive mail-in voting legislation that would make, it's called the Mail-In Voting Act, so easily named to remember mm-hmm. what the content is, would make mail-in voting a permanent option, would create a permanent mail voter status for people. So if you want to vote by mail, you don't have to fill out an application each and every time. Mm-hmm. Right. You can sign up to and just automatically be known to your local election officer as a mail voter, and you get your mail ballot every time. It would actually move the primary date from September up to June to enfranchise voters in both the primary and the general, in addition to allowing expansive return of ballots in the primary, which we are frankly just precluded from doing with our current last in the nation primary date in September. Mm-hmm. Paid time off for voting, all of that is in that omnibus bill and called the Mail-In Voting Act, and some of those provisions, including paid time off for voting, actually coupled with Election Day as a holiday, and moving our primary date from September to June. Those are also standalone bills that I filed in this robust package on election reform. Right. If we've learned anything over the past couple of years, it's that our, and particularly the last couple of months, it's that our democracy is still, in fact, a child in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. And in order for it to thrive, we need to nurture it and help it mature and advance it and modernize it. And that is what this package of election bills that I've filed would bring into fruition. In addition to things on the census and public records and a variety of other aspects of our democracy that are really just so pivotal and crucial to small d democracy and advancing and growing it. I've also been doing a lot of work, of course, in the public health space. This is something I have been working on for a variety of years in a variety of different contexts. I was working on infectious disease prevention infrastructure legislation long before COVID hit, before PPE mm-hmm. was a household term. Sure. We talked about this, I think, in our last conversation.
Yeah, we did.
Now, of course, with COVID, I have really two big bills on public health. One is the Community Immunity Act. This is the refiled bill from last session that would create the sort of longer term infrastructure focused on childhood vaccines and really creating consistency and comprehensive data and some outreach at various points throughout the state. And then the second bill that is certainly more time sensitive and pressing is called the COVID Vaccine Equity Act, which I filed with a crew of colleagues in close consultation with infectious disease experts and epidemiologists, specifically, as the experts would say, to point the fire hose at the hottest part of the fire, which is COVID. And we really haven't seen that on the state level. That bill, it was, speaking of not knowing how long it's been because it's COVID and time is somewhat amorphous these days, we just realized that it's been a little over a month since we filed that bill. And unfortunately, we haven't seen that. While we've seen the governor kind of talk about certain components of that bill, we haven't actually seen any of those pieces implemented yet. And that's really problematic because the people who have been hardest hit, both racially, economically, and regionally, by the virus, have almost universally had the most difficult time getting access to vaccination. And so we've got some real issues there that need to get worked out. So elections, public health, I'm doing work on reproductive justice and intersectional equity. And I've got a whole slate of bills. And I'm really excited about this session. I was also appointed by our Senate president, Senator Spilka, Art Franklin's leading senator, to serve as the Senate chair of the Joint Committee on the Environment, Natural Resources, and Agriculture. And I am really, really excited about that committee work. That's basically all the bills that pertain to protecting our planet, except for the ones that focus on utilities and energy, come to the committee that of which I am now the chair on the Senate side. And I am so excited to really dig in, get to work. I know that, you know, climate action and protecting the environment are hugely important to the residents of Franklin and, frankly, every community I represent.
Right.
Yeah. So to our detriment,
if we avoid it, then it's only going to hurt us more and more.
Yeah. We have concurrent crises and we have to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. And so yeah. I'm excited to have a number of leadership roles in a variety of aspects of that work.
Yeah.
It's going to be exciting. Never a dull moment.
No. And the one good piece, silver lining, certainly there's a number of silver linings that have come out of COVID, but to the extent that a lot more is being done remote, you tend to be able to utilize your time more efficiently. You're not spending less time traveling to the meeting. It's just a clicking on this one, a clicking on that one.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely less gas being used, so that's good.
So down the road, certainly the climate piece is helping, you know, in effect that way as well, because that's one of the warming has, from what I've read so far, there's already cleaner air just with, you know, the 9 months to the year where the shutdown's already happened. People are already seeing that.
Yeah, I have a family member in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And the reports from LA from our family there were just mind-blowing as to how the sky cleared and you could see and there was no smog and it just
right.
You know, we are
Yeah. And then when they had the fires go through, you get that giant dramatic change as well, because it had gone from smog to nice clean air and then the fire smoke, it just it's staggering. But that's also a reminder that, oh, by the way, we do need to do something, because if we don't, things are going to get worse.
So. Yeah. So I'm really excited. I welcome anybody who's got, you know, creative ideas about how to protect our planet. Send them over, send them my way, because that's the committee work that I'll be doing this session. I have a bill to create a statewide car seat recycling program, for example. Because, you know, a baker's dozen of other states already have this. And being someone who has young children, I am very personally well aware of just how much waste can be generated by virtue of car seats, but the bulk of it is plastic and we should be able to recycle that. So, it's not a brand new idea. It's just an idea that hasn't actually happened in Massachusetts. So, cleaning the water. I mean, there's all sorts of plastic bags and general bills about plastics, and also our forests and our cranberry bogs, all these environmental legislative ideas come through this committee. So I'm excited. It's gonna be good.
To the extent that it seems like you can't turn around without touching something that in some way leads to one of those bigger themes in terms of whether it's equity of access and diverse opinions, or we need to take action. And oh, by the way, considering the nature of change, we certainly need to make change manageable. We can't expect to do all of it at once. Rome wasn't built in a day.
Exactly. That is true. That is true. So we're in the kind of the precursor period of when the bills come out. So we've had all of the members of the committees have been assigned. We're kind of in the legislature's in the process of finalizing the joint rules. Those are the set of rules the House and Senate together will be operating under for the course of
the protocols, the meetings, agendas, the notifications, how to get engaged and how to get us kind of the public participation as required as needed.
Right. So once the joint rules, and they do largely the joint rules govern these joint legislative committees. Mm-hmm. Once those joint rules are finalized, all the bills will get assigned. So most of the bills, the vast majority of the bills have already been filed. There were thousands of bills filed before the what we call bill filing day, which this year was the third Friday in February. It's usually the third Friday in January, but it was pushed back because of COVID, which I was grateful to have a little extra time, particularly given that we only had literally a nap between last session and this session. So I was grateful for a little extra time before bill filing day came around. So all the bills have been filed, or the vast majority, at least. I'm sure we'll see some late file bills come in as well. The people have all been assigned, all the members of the legislature have all been assigned to each committee. And once the joint rules are done and fully finalized, then the clerks of the House and the Senate will perform what my staff would call the Hogwarts sorting hat function of the clerks, which is that they take all the bills and just sort them out to all the various committees. And on ENRA, Environment, Natural Resources and Agriculture, we're expecting to see between 300 and 400 bills, which is gonna, you know, set us up for really robust and exciting course of conversations over the legislative calendar before February of 2022, which is when the deadline comes for action on all the bills that get filed and sent to our committee in a timely fashion. If we get some late file bills, then those will come later and we'll have a little more time for those. I'm also excited to be serving on some additional committees. I'll be the vice chair of the Joint Committee on State Administration and Regulatory Oversight, particularly given my prior experience in the executive branch. I'm really looking forward to that work as well. I was a member of that committee last session, and now I'm part of the leadership team. And then I serve on 5 additional committees, including public health, public safety, children and families, community development and small business, and revenue, all of which are really, really, really important issues that we're going to be taking a look at this session. So never a dull moment.
Not at all.
Stuff doing the people's works.
Yeah, we can go in multiple ways and probably talk for days, but being mindful of the time and giving at least some teasers and some insights. So you filed a whole bunch of bills, as did everybody else. That's effectively for the 2-year legislative period, of which there's still got certainly timelines within it, et cetera. So, but it's not that you get a whole bunch of bills that are net new next year to be considered during the year. It's really a 2-year legislative cycle.
Correct. That's right. So in Massachusetts, we have a 2-year legislative cycle. The members of the legislature are always sworn in on the first Wednesday of January. This year, that was January 6th. Sometimes that falls out on January 1st, which makes it an awfully interesting New Year's. Sure, that hasn't happened to me yet. But some of my longer standing colleagues have had their swearing in on January 1st. And then again, usually this bill filing period is within the first few weeks of January. And then we'll be working through all the hearing process, right? The committee process until February of the even numbered year. Budget comes interspersed in there.
That's its separate cycle.
Separate cycle that happens annually instead of, on a 2-year spin. And then the session concludes in a non-COVID year, at least. The session concludes July 31st of the even numbered year. Now, again, that didn't happen last time around because
it kind of got extended.
Right. We had a lot of work to do. Sure. And in fact, I did a lot of that work as my in my committee leadership position from last session, which was the chair of the municipalities committee. We had all our work sort of done and everything was neat and tidy and all tied up and ready to go. And then the pandemic hit and all of a sudden our local governments and regional governments needed so much support from the state in order to be able, at bottom, to keep the lights on, to figure out how town meetings were going to work, right? To toll various deadlines about sending notices and permitting and all sorts of zoning things got really, really intricate and detailed very quickly. And so my co-chair and I who is now a member of the House leadership team, we just got to work. We got to work. We put out multiple municipal bills, and I'm really proud of the work we were able to do to both uplift all of our municipalities and continue to simultaneously uplift all of the people that live throughout the Commonwealth.
Yeah. And I think picking up on a couple of pieces with that, to the extent that you did that, clearly we've seen the effect of it, certainly the meetings, as even the legislative forum you participated in a couple of weeks ago from a school committee perspective, that was fairly well attended. It was approximately 100 or so, if I recall. This week's school committee had over 200 participating, you know, so, and they've had as many as 400. So that open meeting availability change to be able to do a Zoom session and the way Franklin TV has worked with the government as well. So it's now based as a Zoom session, which then gets broadcast via cable, which also gets broadcast via the live stream. So we're starting once and then feeding it through.
Yeah.
The engagement, the opportunity for people to be involved is that much more approachable. People can connect from a phone, a tablet, you know, cable, wherever. So the one key question then, at some point in time, and that's all done under the executive order, at some point in time, we're going to have to build that in to enable that for going forward. Because clearly, to the extent that the voting changes worked and we had great turnouts and everybody, more people participated, with more people participating now, we're going to have to set that up going forward. So is that in one of the bills or in one of the conversations that is going on this way? Because I know there's some open meeting changes. Locally, we're going to have to make some changes as well.
Yeah. There are sort of a whole set of ongoing conversations about meetings, right? About government meetings and governance bodies and how to operate. Well, I personally have a couple of bills in large part because of the work that I did in the last term about making sure that any meeting that needs to happen in compliance with the open meeting law can in fact happen at least partly remotely. And we worked with the Mass Municipal Association on that. And then a separate bill that would kind of take various provisions that either already sunset because we didn't tie them the first time around to the end of the state of emergency. We tied them to a date certain, and that date certain has passed. You know, that would extend those, also open up remote town meeting to open town meeting towns. When we did this in the last cycle, we did it only for representative town meetings. It's a finite number of people, right? It's much more complicated with open town meetings. Now Franklin has a town council, so it's a little bit different, but you know, there's a lot of these issues that needed to get worked out. So I've got these two bills actually that kind of work in conjunction with each other that I'm hoping we'll take up relatively soon so that we can address these issues more comprehensively, especially with open town meetings coming up kind of quickly. It's already March.
It's that season. Yep.
Yeah, we're approaching town meeting season. And I think Wayland in my district is often the first, I think is the first to go. I think they might have delayed for this year by a month or so, but usually they come like right at the tail end of March or early April. So that's gonna happen pretty fast. And so we've got some work to do there as well.
Yeah. So to that point, in terms of process, so you've got all the bills haven't yet been kind of magic hat sorted out into the different committees. So the committee will work on a bill or find maybe two or three bills that are similar, so they'll combine them, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. The committee then brings it back to the full body, in your case, the Senate. The House has a similar process, so they would bring it back. You pass it, then goes to the House. The House, if they pass it, then comes back to a joint if it's necessary for some consensus or agreement. But if they haven't changed what you changed or you haven't changed what they passed, then it just proceeds.
Yeah, that's pretty close.
That's pretty close.
I want to draw your attention and the attention of our listeners to a video series that I do with a state rep from Framingham.
I've shared a couple of those so far.
Called Low Budget Beacon Hill. We're just getting into starting to make a couple more of those. Please, if people have ideas about what you'd like to have us talk about, send them in so we can, you know, try to work them into the very low budget recording schedule. But we do have one already on how a bill becomes a law in Massachusetts in 20 easy steps.
In 20 easy steps.
20 easy steps.
Is that an oxymoron?
Yeah, exactly. it's a fun process and never dull.
I think it shows the engagement and opportunity for, it's not just something that goes, right. It there's opportunity for changing it along the way.
Yeah. And this is actually really relevant. It's so fascinating that we're talking about this because I've recently been having a number of conversations about executive powers, particularly in emergency, in states of emergency executive powers. And there's been kind of an ongoing conversation, especially over the last several weeks, about whether those powers should start to be rolled back. And to me, it's actually not about the structure, right? There's a reason. We are a legislature of 200 people. It is by design, and I think by good design, slower, more deliberative, collaborative, and negotiated. And an executive branch is supposed to be just that, right? An executive branch that makes that is able to be more nimble and make decisions more quickly.
Right.
The reason that any of that conversation is coming up is because people have been wildly dissatisfied with the implementation of, the use of those powers, not because of the structure of it.
Right.
So yes, we will have, a whole slew of bills will come to the NRA committee first. And then we will take a look at them, and some of them will get, some portion of them will get a what we call a favorable report. To see, and then they will go to at least one more committee, if not several more committees, before they actually end up on the floor of the House or the Senate.
Right.
Then they get, debated and voted on the floor, assuming it passes, then it goes to the other chamber, et cetera, et cetera. If the chamber's iterations are the same, then it goes to the governor for his signature. If the chamber's iterations are different, then they have to go to what's called a conference committee so that the differences can be resolved, and then back to each chamber to vote on the negotiated,
the compromise.
Exactly, iteration, and then to the governor for his signature. If he signs it, it becomes law. If he doesn't sign it, if he vetoes the bill, then it comes back again. Another tour on the floors of the House and the Senate, or at this moment, the virtual floors of the House and the Senate. And, we see if we can override the veto. And sometimes we have the votes. We in fact did that last session with abortion access legislation. And sometimes we don't.
Right. Well, so, and because of the timing as well, climate change as one of the pieces of legislation, because he signed it the way when he did and the prior session had ended, he only vetoed it. So it came back effectively unacted upon. The House and Senate then just refiled it, sent it back to him. He was able to veto with some amendment suggestions, which now you're in the process of deliberating to send back to him, either almost the same or not the same, or that's still TBD. But that's the process working as an example.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, that's one of the silver linings of having had just a nap between last session and this session, because normally the period, if a bill goes to the governor too late at the tail end of the session, for the legislature to be able to take veto override action, then it's dead until the beginning of the next session, starts, which usually is a period of 5 months, but this time was a period of 5 hours.
Yeah, so it's not nanoseconds.
So in some kind of strange way, at least in this context, that worked out fairly well. In fact, as we're recording it, the Senate will be taking up that climate action legislation with having evaluated and assessed the governor's amendments in just about half an hour. So I'll be heading into that session very shortly. By the time this airs, it'll be done already and be headed to the House. That I expect that'll be going back to the governor very soon. That's exciting.
While we're recording this, clearly, and things are still continuing to develop, we can include that in the show notes as a byline, an update. Oh, by the way, check here for the link to the legislation.
Excellent. Yep, it is S9. And so you can find it right on the legislative website. And if you're looking for instructions, any of our listeners are looking for instructions on how to navigate malegislature.gov, you can go to my website on the agenda page, and we've got some step-by-step instructions for how to use the legislative website to track bills and sign up for auto alerts about when, certain bills when the legislature takes any kind of action on the bills that are most exciting to you.
Right. Yeah, and the only piece, and I've used it fairly frequently, certainly the more as either you or Jeff or Karen have specific legislation that matters, obviously, from a Franklin perspective. I don't watch everything because I'm kind of focused on the Franklin piece. Right. But to the extent that a lot of the work these days is doing that. So I've been finding the links to include those in the notes. So as part of what I try to do for the Franklin readers, and they'll recognize it, is that, you know, I'll put in whether it's the Commonwealth Magazine article, the Boston Globe article, and then the link to the direct legislation, or maybe your tweet, Jeff's tweet, et cetera. So people get as much of the package as possible so that they can follow the links and then take the deep dive, hopefully. And then ultimately reach out to you, Jeff, Karen, et cetera, to follow up accordingly.
Yeah, great. Well, I love hearing from people. We've been doing office hours virtually on alternating Friday mornings, and you can sign up for those on the website. We're not doing anything in person because of COVID, but we've been having virtual office hours for a year now. So we've gotten pretty good at it. We've also started doing some senior coffee hours, which have been really fun. People actually bring mugs. So if you have a fun mug to share, you can actually show your coffee mug.
Yes.
Those are accessible by video conference, of course, via Zoom, and also by phone if people are uncomfortable with the technology for the video conferencing. Yep. So we do those on alternating
I think
months.
You're doing a new thing. I was just seeing you've got kind of a lunch with leaders that's coming.
Yeah, March is Women's History Month. And so as part of Women's History Month, I wanted to highlight some of women's history in the making in our district. And so we're doing this kind of lunchtime conversations with women leaders in the municipalities in the district. And so I'm really, really excited about that. We're gonna be having somebody really great from Franklin is gonna be joining us. I'm not sure of the date off the cuff.
That's okay. We'll put the teaser in and the link so that people can stay tuned.
Great, but it's going to be a really exciting series. We've got book authors and racial justice advocates and organizers and all sorts of people doing really amazing things. And I'm really excited to listen and learn from all these amazing women.
Yeah, definitely. No, kudos for that, because that's one of the pieces that I'm enjoying doing what I'm doing, because as long as I can continue to learn and, oh, by the way, have some fun with it as well, then what's wrong with that, right?
Yeah, no, that's part of the great thing of, you know, particularly doing public service work is, you know, there's always something new. There's always a new issue. There's always something to learn about. You know, as legislators, we have to know at least a little bit about a whole lot of things. To be able to kind of dig deeper and take a deeper dive in you know, this area or another area, learning about the various awesome things that are going on in the district and highlighting the leadership of the wonderful people that I have the privilege of representing is one of the best parts of the job.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Well, thank you for doing what you're doing on our behalf, because we're having fun following along. And clearly, as we've in the two key topics, but democracy, voting as an aspect, and then health. Who doesn't want to talk about those? Because, oh, by the way, they directly affect every single one of us. So
they sure do. They sure do. And if you know, one of the biggest questions that we got when I filed the Community Immunity Act last session, specifically about immunizations and infectious disease prevention, people said, "Well, why do we need it? Why do we need this legislation now?" Mm-hmm. And then, like 3 months later, COVID hit.
Right.
So we got our answer. And you know, I certainly wish that had not been the case.
It was prescient, but perhaps in the wrong way.
right. But you know, one of the other things that we've learned is that we are really, truly all in this together. We will sink or swim together. And that's why it's so important for people to get the vaccine when it is your turn, right? If you can get to a mass vax site, go there. Gillette has thousands of appointments opening up on a weekly basis. There's a pre-registration system that will be open by the time this interview airs. Finally, it would have been great if that had just happened at the beginning, but it didn't. Mm-hmm. But this is finally happening now. You know, Franklin has done incredible work uplifting public health, as have all of the other municipalities that I represent, and frankly, all the municipalities across the Commonwealth. You know, the only way we get out of a public health crisis is by coming together in community to support each other and recognizing that, in fact, our personal health is connected because of public health. Mm-hmm. And so get the vaccine, keep wearing your masks, use your sanitizer, wash your hands, keep your distance. We're not out of this yet. Mm-hmm. I think we are starting to see some meaningful light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. And then picking up on one of the points we mentioned earlier, and then we kind of went differently from that thread, but tying it back to the extent that the threads are all connected in some way anyway.
They always are.
to the extent that certainly it is the executive branch and your legislative setting up more kind of the system upon which executive clearly executes. And then if they do something that people and you don't agree with, then you've got the oversight role of that to help bring the balance. But I think going back to the role and then determining, one of the key questions that you had started with the bill was to really enhance our existing Board of Health, Department of Health structure, which, oh, by the way, it seems like that particular plan, which had been developing over years, got tossed in order to do the vaccine site distributions that we, you know, so, okay, that happened. We still need to get through this, but then let's figure out how we need to do it better the next time, because there may very well be a next time.
Yeah, there might. I mean, I really hope this is a once in a generation scenario. You know, I will tell you, everything about life is drastically more difficult and challenging, to put it mildly, in a global deadly pandemic. It is wildly disappointing to me that decades worth of expert work were tossed out the window by our sitting governor in favor of a particular approach that he decided would be the better approach. And he continues to make a number of policy decisions that try to drive people to mass vaccination sites. And yes, from an administrative perspective, they are more efficient than local health delivering 100 doses a day, or even, you know, 200 or 300 doses a day. But this is not an either or situation. And in fact, it cannot be an either or situation. And I'll tell you why. You know, recently I've heard from honestly countless constituents at this point facing a whole, you know, variety of issues that are either directly or indirectly caused by the pandemic. And the bulk of that recently pertains to either unemployment or vaccines. And I had a constituent say to me, who's in this 65 to 74 age bracket, say to me, you know, I took my older family members, a mother or an aunt, and I don't recall which, I took her to get her vaccine, and she was in the 75 plus category at the local health vaccine clinic. And it was great. She was in and out in 20 minutes, and 15 of those minutes were the wait period and the watching to make sure that she didn't have any kind of issue with the vaccine. Fine. So it was great. It was comfortable. She knew where to go. She was ready to go. And this, and you know, and her family member got the shot and was scheduled to go back for the second one. And in between the time when that experience had happened and when this constituent of mine became eligible, the governor made the decision to strip local health of their ability to deliver vaccines. And now I have this constituent who said, you know, now I have no choice. My only two choices at this point are to go to Gillette or not get vaccinated. And I want this vaccine. I want this vaccine so badly. I know it is important. I know it is what we all need. I have been separated from everybody for a year, and I am tired and sad and lonely. And I am not going to go to Gillette because I am scared of getting COVID while I'm there, because I don't know where to park, because I don't know what door to go into, because of very reasonable and rational fears and concerns about going to a mass vaccination site with thousands of people.
Sure.
And this constituent, and I'm sure that this person is not the only one, is not going to go. This person is not going to go to a mass vac site. A mass vaccination site is not the answer for everyone. And this is a person who does also have sort of the structural access to be able to get there. To be able to find an appointment, she's got a car, right? She could get there. This is to say nothing of the overarching equity issues that also mean no access if, you know, if you continue to drive people to mass vaccinations, we've got some real serious problems.
Yeah, we do. We do. Well, being mindful of your time, and I know you've got some other things on your schedule today. And
yes,
we should
go still vote on that climate bill.
Absolutely. That is critical. So certainly I don't want to hinder that. And we can certainly set up some time. So, you know, a couple of months down the road, or even weeks down the road, we can certainly come back again, because all of the topics that are, as we've said, near and dear to what we're doing, you've got a hand in a lot of those. So thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for taking time today so that the listeners can hear and hopefully both listen and then follow up with you on any of the individual matters accordingly.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Steve, as always, for having me. I'm happy to come back anytime you like. Folks can reach me by email, honestly, is the best way these days, especially since all of our work is remote. It's becca.rausch@masenate.gov. You can find me online at beccarauschma.com. You can see all of the components of my agenda and low budget Beacon Hill video series and stuff about transparency, all of that great content. We do have specific pages dedicated just to COVID. We've tried to boil down the information into a user-friendly, easily digestible format for everybody. You can find information about the Community Immunity Act, the COVID Vaccine Equity Act, the Mail-In Voting Act, various pieces of legislation that we talked about over the course of the last of our time together today. All that is on the website. And you can also find me on Facebook and Twitter at Becca Rausch MA, both platforms. So you can follow along for real-time updates. Yep. And please don't hesitate to reach out.
No, we won't be bashful. And I will encourage the others.
I know you won't.
And for the listeners and readers, generally they see at least some of those. I may not be perfect in getting everything out, but a number of those certainly have been shared through Franklin Matters to help spread the word and to make sure people are aware of what's going on, because it all matters at one point. So
you do such a tremendous service for the community, Steve. Thank you so much for all you do.
Well, thank you very much. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.